Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Hello to you, the listener. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Gail Seiler, your host for today. It's a lovely fall day, but some people are still recovering from the rain and flooding that we had a week ago. So we wanted to let our listeners know that there has been a disaster declaration for Story County, which means that if you sustain damages related to the flash flooding on September 22nd, you may qualify for assistance. You have 45 days to apply, and we will have several links on the KHOI website with information on how and where to apply for assistance. We have a number of different stories on our show today. Later in the show, we'll hear from people involved in the arts community. We'll hear about a new show at Design on Main and also about the artist studio tour, which is coming up on October 8th and 9th. And we'll also learn about an online crowdsourced poetry project honoring Iowa birds. Last week, as part of an ISU lecture at Memorial Union, there was a student panel called In the Heart of the Arab Spring, Iowa State Students Share Their Stories. So we invited those students into KHOI today to share their experiences as participants in the Arab Spring. So I want to welcome you this morning. We have Kareem Abdelhamid, Mohammed Abufalga, and Mohammed El Fortia. Thank you for being here. Just to remind our listener, the Arab Spring was a wave of demonstrations and protests in the Arab world that began in December 2010 in Tunisia and spread throughout countries across North Africa and the Arab League. So maybe we can just go down one of you at a time and ask, what was your involvement in the Arab Spring?
All right. When the Arab Spring started in Libya and in my city, Misrata, it started a few days after. My involvement was basically going out in the streets with everybody else and making our voice heard and demanding change and protection to the people in the city of Benghazi who were being killed at the time. That sums up my involvement.
And you were living there at the time, so this was before you came to ISU?
That's true, yeah, that's correct.
So my involvement with the revolution, So it varied across the course of the revolution, but when it started in January in Egypt, specifically in the 25th of January, for the first couple of months, my involvement was only in my hometown. I went out in protest, and I have took part in the popular committees, which was assembled from people in each neighborhood in order to fill in the security void after the police forces disappeared in the revolution. And then later on, my first chance to go to the Tahrir Square, which was the heart of everything that was going on in Egypt, was in the November of 2011, which was kind of the second wave of the revolution.
Okay. Mohammed?
Mine wasn't different from Mohammed's because we came from the same country. Weeks before the revolution started in Libya, I was following the news regarding the Tunisian and Egyptian revolutions. So I was waiting for the Libyans. And when the protests started, I just went out to the street along with the people of my city and demonstrated against the regime.
And what motivated you? What compelled you to put yourself in that position, which was dangerous, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, for me, it was mostly everybody in my family was going, so I went with them. I wasn't when I was looking at the news coming from the other cities, you know, you have to do something. This is not far away from where I live, and we have to stand together to stay strong. So everybody had to do something. I know that. I knew that at the time, so I knew that I had to go out and make my voice heard.
Mm-hmm. And you were young at that time. I mean, how old were some of you?
I was 16 at the time.
Yeah. Similar ages for this?
So, yeah, I remember I was junior in high school, so I was around 16, 17.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Honestly, like, at the beginning, I was touched by the values they were asking for. But I feel like this was not affecting me directly because, you know, if you come from a family that, you know, in a, like, upper middle class, you are not really affected by the things that protesters went out and asking for. But by the third day of the revolution, when you find out that how the government is brutal in against the protesters and they started killing them, then at some point you're like, no, we have to take a stand. Even though if I'm not affected right now, later down the way, something would happen to me because this is not a government that we should trust.
And that's Egypt you're talking about.
Yeah, that's Egypt.
Okay.
For me, I was interested in politics since middle school. So I was, hearing about other countries and how they live their lives. And when I went to high school, I started to write some articles. And coming to 2011, it was not noticeable that freedom of speech did not exist in Libya, and that was one of the reasons that motivated me to go out, because as a teenager I was kind of rebel against the rules, and I wanted to speak my mind, and this is just one of the reasons. The other reasons are seeing the people being killed in Libya throughout the last decades of the previous government's era. So I felt that was our moment, and if we want to change something, we either do it at that time or we're never going to do it. So.
Mm-hmm. That was like the chance, the opportunity in many of the countries.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
And were there differences between what happened? I mean, of course, we hear in the news, what the news shares with us. But were there differences between what was happening in those two countries? I mean, I'm sure you've talked about that just among yourselves. What were some of the differences?
I would say I would speak for Egypt first, then give both Mohammeds the chance to talk about Libya. In Egypt, it didn't get as, we didn't have any kind of killings the protesters and the demonstrations remained peaceful to a great extent. At some point there were kind of violence from the government or the military, but the protesters remained peaceful. We didn't get to have two camps fighting each other.
Mm-hmm.
That was the case in Egypt, and that's one of the differences. I guess the other difference is the course after we both got rid of the previous dictators, in Egypt it was Mubarak, and Libya, Gaddafi.
Mm-hmm.
It went down in kind of different ways. So in Egypt we had an elected president, then we had a military coup to overthrow him. So yeah, we went down different pathways after the revolution.
After the revolution, okay.
And Libya was absolutely different from Egypt and Tunisia. I mean, I'm sure all the Libyans who went to protest, they were hoping a similar scenario to what happened in Tunisia, or at least in Egypt. But then we actually had less than 1 week of peaceful protests, and then the regime started to respond with violence and force to the demonstrations. So soon after the start of the demonstrations, people had to defend themselves because they were being killed and they were being shot down. So that's the main difference, because in Tunisia and Egypt, mostly we can say that the revolution remained peaceful for at least three weeks at least. But in Libya, that wasn't the case. And then instead of ending the revolution in less than 1 month, the Libyans had to keep fighting for 8 months instead of just 1 month. And then what happened after that was completely different, because the government that took over the country wasn't an established institution before the start of revolution, but it actually started, or it was launched during the war in Libya.
Mm-hmm. Anything to add to that?
Well, he said everything that could be said.
Okay, so then let's. Karim started to talk about how differences proceeded after that. So let's talk more about that. How what's happened since then? I'm sure you have more of a sense of what's happening in both Libya and Egypt now, different than we get on the news. Can you fill us in on your perspective on that?
Yeah, for sure. So speaking of Egypt, it's hard to just talk about from 2011 till now in few sentences,
but
I will do my best. So
thank you.
right after Mubarak stepped down, who was the previous president or the former president of Egypt, the military, the SCAF, which is the Supreme Council of Armed Forces, were in the charge of the country, and that was just temporary till we have our Congress elections and then the presidential elections, and then we write up a new constitution for Egypt. And all the things happened. So we had the Congress elections, and then we got presidential elections, and for the first time, it was that considered the first democratic elections in the history of Egypt. And then everything was going not smooth, but in kind of the right path. But for sure, after 30 or more years of corruption, it's hard to get everything corrected in the first few years, in the first couple of years. So what happened is the people went out against the new elected president, and then just after 1 year of his election, he got overthrown by another military general, mm-hmm. and now we are back to square zero. Mm. So it's back to the status that Egypt is controlled again by someone from the military, which has been the case since 1952.
Okay, so you feel like really it slipped back now to what it was before.
Exactly, but the thing, what's different now is that people have already spoken up mm-hmm. one time, and now they have the courage to go out against anyone again, even though now it's way harder because mm-hmm. the military learned it from the previous lessons. So it's not easy to just go out and protest as we did in 2011, but the people have this kind of the mindset that we are the ones who should be ruling the country, or we decide who should be ruling the country. So even though if currently it's ruled by someone from a military mm-hmm. general, but we can still go out and okay. protest against this person.
So there is some optimism and hope maybe that wasn't there before.
Exactly. That would be the difference okay. between before 2011 and okay. right now.
Yeah. And what about in Libya since the Arab Spring?
Since the Arab Spring. Okay. We had a year, basically a good year after the Arab Spring in Libya. It was going well. But I would say, in my opinion, our politicians did not make the appropriate choices for Libya to make the transition from a dictated country by the Gaddafi to, a democratic country, ruled country. So that's one of the things that happens. The transition didn't really happen, and it was very slow. If there was anything, mm-hmm. That's my opinion.
Okay.
On it.
Anything to add?
Yeah, I agree with Mohammed. We had kind of good year at first till the end of 2012, but then politicians started to, to fight their own traditional political game, and they actually led the country to civil war in 2014, and then that's what's going on till now.
Mm-hmm. By the way, we have three governments right now. That's the kind of problem we're talking about.
Is that in like different parts of the country?
Two are inside the country, one is outside the country.
Okay.
Yeah, one is in the east side, one is the west side, and one is just outside the country.
One is outside trying to
unite both.
Okay. Yeah. So do you feel any sense of optimism like Karim expressed based on what happened? Do you see there's more any possibility that wasn't there before, or is that still uncertain?
Of course, there's always hope. I would say the people in Libya still have hope. These two governments try to encourage the people of each side to hate the other side. Mm-hmm. That's, well, a few people fell in that for that, but not most of them. People are now realizing that, you know, these two politicians are not working really for the people. Yeah, for the people. Yeah. So they, well, now people need to step up and say, you know, okay, you, the two governments that are placed in Libya, you had your chance. You had many years to work, and you kind of didn't do a lot for the country. Well, it's time for you to step down and let the next people try to work and do their best to help Libya.
Okay. And you did the panel at ISU last week, and now you're here. Thank you again. Why do you speak about the Arab Spring? What do you want people here in Iowa to know or learn or understand? What motivates you to continue, you know, speaking in forums and so on like this?
One of my personal reasons is I feel like people here do not know much about what happened in our countries or Egypt specifically. And even if they know, there are sources of information are probably the media, and the media is always influenced by whoever is funding this kind of a channel or someone. So I feel like if I'm someone who took part in the revolution, I have experienced it and I have saw a lot of what was going on in, from Egypt starting 2011, and if I could come here and speak and share my knowledge with other people, so they would kind of get what was happening. They could get the true picture of the revolution, and you know they could. It's always good to hear from someone who had firsthand experience, better than hearing from politicians and now you know people who are like analysis or they know too much about the, you know, it's more to I feel like the people would like to learn more from someone who experienced it than someone who just studied the revolution.
The idea was that with all what's going on in the Middle East now, looking at Syria and some other countries, people usually ask about what started this crisis. So the idea was that we have the Arab Spring 5 years ago, and what we usually hear is what the media says and or what the experts said. So we were thinking of maybe we can provide a different perspective on the topic, and this perspective is kind of unique because those who are going to talk were actually there, and they took part of the whole moment. So that was the idea why we actually wanted to do that. And the political science department and the lecture program actually supported the idea, and they thought that it was a good idea to instead of having a professor or an expert talking or journalist talking about the Arab Spring, we have students who actually protested or participated in the events, talk about their experience.
Yeah, we're lucky to have you here and to have you willing to keep us informed and to give us a sense of what really happened and what was really there. It must be hard to be far away when things are still, you know, happening. There's still turmoil and things going on. So it must be hard to be away from your countries.
Yeah, even if we are, you know, like away in terms of geography, but we are always thinking about what's happening there, and we all have families, and you know we have people who we care about back in our home countries, and we're always, you know, keeping up with the news and, you know, calling our families and seeing what's going on there. Because I mean, personally, I'm going back to my country soon after graduation, and I feel like that's where I should care more, and that's where I should invest my efforts in order to make a better country.
Mohammed?
I have still another year in here, so I would like to, you know, if anybody wants to talk about what happened in Libya, I'm gladly will answer any questions anybody has. Well, also, people in neighboring countries for Libya didn't really know much about what happened in Libya. How about people living in the United States who are living like hundreds of miles away? So it's kind of obvious that not a lot of people know about what happened over there. So
yeah.
I would say it's really hard being away because sometimes you overthink some stuff. I mean, you hear news, you think it's like really bad where it's not, or sometimes you underestimate some events. So being there is always the, I would say, the best part, especially if you have family there. So, because when you're with them, you're not much concerned about them. You're not as much as if you were away. And similar to Karim, I'm going back right after graduation, mm-hmm. and I'm going there because I, as Mohammed said, I have hope and I'm optimistic about the future of Libya just because I trust the people. Yeah, I don't trust politicians similar to a lot of mm-hmm. people around the world, but I have trust in and believe in the. And
trust the people.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming in today. I know there's a lot more we could talk about, but at least you've given people an idea of your experiences and mm-hmm. perhaps encouraged them to ask more questions and look for more information. So thank you all very much.
If I may add, we're part of the Arab Student Association, and if anyone had any questions, they can always contact us, and we'll be happy to answer any questions or...
Okay, and if you have a website, we can put a link to that website or contact information on our page.
Thank you so much.
Hello, my name is Connor Keenan, and I'm an intern for the Ames Community Arts Council, inviting you to the 2016 Ames Area Studio Tour. October 8th and 9th, 20 Ames Area artists will open their studios to the public for a great inside look at local art. Here's a little bit about artist Greg Lamont and his studio, Northwood Clay. Greg grew up in West Suburban Chicago and discovered pottery at a very early age. One of his earliest works in high school, a sculpture of various leaf forms joined together, earned him an honorable mention in the regional high school art competition. While Greg continued to work in clay when he started his college career at Columbia, he chose to major in graphic arts because careers in clay seemed to be few and far between. After getting married his junior year, he left college to be an artist, working in the Loop downtown Chicago. He was employed in retail and commercial art sales. In 1983, Greg's wife got a job at Iowa State, moving them back to Ames. He worked at the bookstores in town, continuing to deal in art supplies. Greg returned to college at Iowa State, this time focusing on the medium that's always called to him, pottery. He worked hard to hone his craft during his time in college. Influenced by the nature of fundamental ceramics, Greg draws his most significant inspiration from Soji Hamada, a 20th century Japanese potter who has a major figure in the Minjai folk art movement. Minjai is built upon a philosophical pillar of handcrafted ceramics by ordinary people. While crafting his pieces now, Greg focuses more on the interaction of the pottery with the buyer. As he continues to evolve as an artist, he would like to pursue blacksmithing and wood turning, finding inspiration in three-dimensional art. When visitors come to his space during the studio tour, Greg hopes to help people understand how difficult it can be to create a quality piece of pottery. Unlike commercial cups or bowls, an item made by a potter is truly one of a kind and creates with it a part of the artist. If a buyer drinks out of a cup of Lamont's, he hopes that he or she is inspired by it and builds a special attachment to that piece. By participating in the studio tour, Greg hopes his visitors will develop a greater appreciation of handmade artwork that they see in galleries and at art fairs, and perhaps some more frequent patrons and customers based in part on what they have learned about the artist's personal journey of making art. To learn more about Greg Lamont and Northwood Clay Studio, please join us on our Ames Area Studio Tour from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturday, October 8th, and from noon to 4 p.m. Sunday, October 9th. And don't forget about the after party from 6 to 9 p.m. at Alluvial Brewing, Saturday night, October 8th. For more information, please visit www.amesart.org. www.amesart.org.
You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and that was an appetizer, I'll say, for the studio tour to get you excited about that event which is coming up. And we're going to be sticking with that theme of art and the studio tour, and I've been joined in the studio by two new people, Catherine Reinhart, an artist who has a new show opening at Design on Main, is with us now. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
And also, we've been joined by Sarah Merritt, the Board President for the Ames Community Arts Council, which is the sponsor for the studio tour.
Yes, thank you for having me, Catherine.
And you're going to tell us all about that.
Gail and Catherine.
So on October 8th and 9th, the Ames Community Arts Council will sponsor the Artist Studio Tour, and we're going to be talking about that in a minute. But first, Catherine, you have a new show opening this weekend, tomorrow, right?
Correct. Tomorrow at 6 p.m.
Okay, right around the corner. So tell us first about the work that you do.
Well, I primarily work in fiber, but I do printmaking and drawing. This project is a little bit different. I don't know if you want me to launch into that yet.
Yeah, you can do that.
Yeah, this project was new. It's a collaboration between me and another artist. So the work in the gallery is a collaborative effort. So it's a series of drawings that we mixed media drawings that my collaborator Allison and I did together. And then there'll be an interactive sculpture, which the audience can come in and manipulate and play with. Yeah, it's going to be really fun.
An interactive sculpture.
Yes.
And they can't break it?
Ah. If they did, it wouldn't be a big deal.
Okay.
It'd be hard to break.
And is that made of fabric?
So it's, no, it's no? made of these boxes, essentially. And then there will be dowels that you can wrap in thread, different colors of thread. And then there's also some objects that I've gathered from various interesting objects that you can arrange in the sculpture. So you can stack, unstack, wrap, manipulate. Yeah, well, do whatever you want, really.
So people are going to that particular piece, people are going to be able to help make the sculpture or change the sculpture?
Exactly. So Allison and I collaborated on the drawings, and everyone else can collaborate on this sculpture.
Oh, that's cool. Great. Great way to – we like that at KHOI. We have our mural there that everyone – too, from the past years, from Art Walk, that everyone contributed to. So we like that idea of community participation.
Yeah.
And – the just give us the specifics on the show and the opening event so people have that.
Well, the show, the opening event is tomorrow evening from 6 to 8 p.m. And it's free. It's open to the public. It's all ages as well. Like mm-hmm. I said, kid friendly even. So bring your families. There will be a series with this exhibition. There's also other events. And so we're part of the Ames Studio Tour. We'll be open that weekend. There's a gallery talk Friday, October 7th, by Nancy Gebhardt. She's going to talk about the Grant Wood murals, which were part of the inspiration for these pieces, actually, part of our initial inspiration. And then every Thursday night from 5 to 7 p.m., I'll be there in the gallery for people to come in, sort of extended after work hours, so the community can have another chance to be involved. So,
all month?
Yeah, all month.
Wow, that's a big commitment.
Yeah, four Thursdays.
People better go out and see you.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah, don't leave her there all by herself.
Everyone, please come.
Yeah. Oh, that's fun. Okay, and you're part of the studio tour. So we'll come back to that. Okay.
Okay.
So let's bring Sarah into the conversation now. So for people who might not know, what is the studio tour?
The studio tour is just kind of like it sounds. It's a self-guided tour of local artist studios, and that can be anything from visual art to vocal art. KHOI is part of the studio tour.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, woodworking and bike creation and music. So, you know, Ames is this great, vibrant arts community that we really want to showcase, and we really want people to see artists working in their own spaces and see what those spaces look like. I mean, I'm embarrassed to say this is my first time at KHOI.
Really?
In the booth. Uh-huh. I've been out there.
Oh, okay.
But this is a new experience for me, and it's really fascinating. And we want people from the community and from outside communities possibly to come in and see what that's like and to see what see artist demonstrations, to possibly look at and purchase people's work, or get to know these really fascinating artists.
And they can talk to the artists. So what kind of interactions are there usually occurring during these tours?
Well, that's the fun part, is that there are so many different mediums and so many artists working in a variety of media that you get the opportunity to talk with all these different people. Some of them might be doing demonstrations. Mm-hmm. Others will talk about their process and how they got started, or other specific artists like Lisa Lang. She's a ceramicist. She'll talk about how she became a full-time artist, you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. Some artists work on their own time but have a full-time job that might be different from what they're doing. So it's just kind of getting different perspectives on what it's like to be an artist in the community. And we use that word artist to describe that whole full variety of
a broad
of work.
View of art, right, and artists. Right. And how many studios will be open on the tour?
There are 20 participants. And they actually range. They're not just in Ames. We have Molly Nagel from Story City, who does wonderful work at Upper Story Studio. We have Art Zuccotti, who's a little bit out, you know, on the edges of Ames, and he's a glass artist. You know, we have all these really wonderful artists, and there's a map available on the website.
Okay.
So www.amesart.org is where you can get a little bit more information. We also do have a studio tour headquarters at Worldly Goods. So if folks are coming in from Ames and maybe don't know where to orient themselves or where to get started, they can come into Worldly Goods and view the map there and get more information about where to go and, you know, who to see and that kind of thing. Maybe get some help figuring out the route they want to take, that kind of thing.
Okay,
so you don't have to visit everybody, right. But we encourage people to see as many people as they can.
And they have 2 days to do it.
They have 2 days.
Saturday and Sunday.
Saturday, October 8th. The studio tour is from 10 to 4.
Mm-hmm.
So you can go in at any time during that. And then Sunday, it's from noon to 4. So October 9th, Sunday. And then we're doing something new and different this year where we actually received funding from the Commission on the Arts, CODA, and some funding from the Ames Commission and Visitors Bureau. And part of that funding is going towards hosting a social event that's really was intended to bring the artists together so that the artists could meet each other and see what's going on and they could kind of unwind.
Oh, yeah, because they're spread out in their
studios. Yeah, they don't get to see what everyone else is doing. So it's nice to get them together so that they can interact. And then it's open to the public so people can come in and, you know, kind of meet them all at once, hopefully. And then there will be entertainment. So we have a new member of the Arts Council, the Mirage Middle Eastern Belly Dance Troupe, will be performing, as well as some vocal performers and musicians, some who are participating from Vinyl Collective. So there are four different musicians. So Ben Schrag, who organizes the open mic at the Vinyl Cafe,
mm-hmm.
Michaela Thompson, Jonathan Marco Correa, and Reggie Greenlaw, who's kind of an Ames staple. So we have a variety of musicians and entertainment, and, you know, you can come and drink beer at Alluvial Brewing.
And when is that again?
So the studio tour social is Saturday night, so October 8th. You get a couple hours to kind of relax and then come out at 6.
Okay.
It's from 6 to 9. The belly dancers will be performing at 6:15, and then there'll be the rest of the musicians and the performers throughout the evening. So it should be really fun.
Okay. So is it artists who've participated before? So if someone came last year, might they say, oh, I've seen all those artist studios? Or are there some new ones?
There are some returning artists, but we do actually have a fair amount of new artists.
Mm-hmm.
We have a few people who are just new to the area. We have Calcab Merchant, who is a painter. She has her home gallery, and she's an incredibly interesting artist. She's done everything from set design for, major plays. She decorated the Christmas tree for the White House 1 year. I mean, she's done a whole variety of things. And she teaches here in the community. She's kind of a new artist mm-hmm. who's being involved this year. And then, of course, Design on Main is always has fluctuating work. And we're really excited that Catherine's going to be there mm-hmm. and her work is really beautiful. So it's really worth coming out and checking it out.
Okay. And Catherine, so you're going to be in Design on Main, so people will come there, not to your studio, wherever that is, where you actually produce your art.
That's correct. They'll be coming to the gallery. I produce my art in my home. is my home studio.
And that's true for a lot of artists and Ames.
So some of the – when people stop by some of the studios, they'll actually be going into the artist's personal space in some
ways. Right, right. Actually, most of the studios – we have a few folks that are with organizations like the Story Theater Company. They'll be showcasing their new space, their new black box space and areas like that. And we have some artists who work on a commercial level. So we have some, furniture artists or woodworking artists or Jeff Bach, who does these really wonderful custom bicycles. So he's a real functional artist, but it's wonderful to see that process and get to know that process. And then Molly Nagel, like I mentioned before, she has her own studio in Story City. But most of the other artists, like Cow Cab Merchant, and folks like that are working out of their homes. Letitia Kennemer is back this year. She was a participating artist last year. Mm-hmm. She works out of her home. So it's really it gives the opportunity to really interact with artists on an intimate level. But it's also really it's kind of fun. I mean, if you've never participated in the studio tour before, I suggest that you do it just so you can see Ames. I mean, you can just go to these different places and get to know these different little neighborhoods meet all these different people.
Get inside
people's spaces.
I always like going for walks and looking in the windows. Yeah. I mean, not peering, but just as you walk by and things like, that's an interesting thing they have hanging on their wall.
Right,
or something
and
like
to get it in context, like you're walking around at night and you get to smell people's laundry and what they're cooking for dinner. I mean, that's kind of weird, but when you get to see a person in the space that they work comfortably, you get that full experience of where they keep their stuff and where they get their stuff and how they pull it out and is it messy? Is it clean?
Most of them will try to be organized.
Clean for the studio tour, but that may not be the case all the time.
Yeah, kind of the idea that artists are people too.
Right, right.
Right. So, Catherine, why do you participate in this? Is this the first year or have you participated other years and why?
Well, actually, I participated last year in my home studio, and that was the first year. And I hadn't intended on participating. I actually told her, oh, I want to go this time, so I don't want to participate. But then the dates for the show just ended up being on the studio tour, and I was like, okay.
You're in.
It's destiny, right? It's meant to be. It's a great thing. I think last year they started it up after a brief hiatus or something. And so I'm really excited to see, where this studio tour goes in the future and bringing in lots of people, like she said, from out of state even and from all around Iowa. That'd be wonderful.
Do you like interacting with people? And because often I would think when you make art, then it goes somewhere and people interact with it, but you're often not there to witness that. So it must be different when you see people like actually experiencing your art and maybe hearing what they say. Or
it's nice to be a fly on the wall sometimes. Sometimes I just hang out in the gallery and listen to people. Not always, but it is wonderful because as an artist, when you're in your studio, you trust your intuition when you're making things, but you're not necessarily sure what is truly connecting with someone. And so when you get to have these conversations, I just think it's very fruitful. And it's it gives you lots of direction and where to go next. Or I have found that some of the most powerful conversations that have led me or steered me in a different direction or encouraged me have been with people in a gallery but I don't love, it's kind of awkward sometimes. But a studio tour is a little different because you could show them how to dye fabric or how to spin wool or how to make a drawing or how to mix paint or how to blow glass.
Yeah.
And it's a little less intimidating than telling them your conceptual framework for your art.
Right. And we like to leave it up to the artists to kind of figure out what they're most comfortable doing, if it's a demonstration or if it's just, chatting with people and showing people around. And folks that participate really like that interaction. At least we hope they do. So, we're looking for that interaction. And that's another element of the studio tour where people don't actually really, like you said, people interact with an art piece or mm-hmm. An installation or a commercial product, or, you know, they listen to the radio or they hear music performances, or they, you know, they see artwork by CASA, but they don't go into CASA, you know. So
right.
This is that really that connection part that really is the powerful driving force behind works of art, is that connection that people have to the world and to each other and to communicating all of these different things. So yeah, we like that.
Yeah. And is this something that's unique to Ames? I mean, it just sounds wonderful. Or do other places have something like this?
Well, there was actually, I think it was last weekend, there was a wider sort of a studio tour that actually artist Art Sakati participated in that was all around Iowa. So it's more of an, well, I guess that's not true. It's like a 90-minute tour.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a little bit more spread out. So people are doing this in lots of places.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you're from Ames and you don't get out much, you know, this is the opportunity for you to really get out and kind of see it.
Yeah. And it looks to be a lovely fall weekend up. So people, whether people drive and go to, you know, the whole tour and go to some of the more outside Ames places. But if people want to walk, there's a number of places they can
sure.
go just kind of in a central location. Is
yeah,
that right?
So there's a lot of centrally located things, mostly around the Main Street area, like Design mm-hmm. on Main
right.
is just around the corner.
K-H-O-I.
Is on Main Street. K-H-O-I is right here on Douglas.
Right.
Barb Walton has a studio on Main Street. You know, she works in caustic, and it's breathtaking work. And so, you know, if you wanted to walk it, you mm-hmm. could walk it, or you could walk in pockets of it.
Mm-hmm.
There are some places where you would need to drive out to, places like Story City, or, you know, a little bit farther out in Ames. But those places are really worthwhile to take a look at. And because it's self-directed,
mm-hmm.
you can decide how long you want to spend in specific areas.
Yeah, and so. You could do some on Saturday and some on Sunday and spread it out.
Right. Come to the party,
yeah.
get to know people, figure out what artists you haven't seen that you really want to go see their work. You know, that's another part of the reason for the party is, you know, learn a little bit more and then get excited about meeting more artists.
Right. You get to hang out with artists.
Right.
Very cool. Okay. So we're going to have all the links for both your show, Carolyn, and the event as a whole, Sarah, on our website so people can get more information, and the maps are available there. The map
right.
is available there.
Right.
Okay. So just let's reiterate, it's not this weekend, it's next weekend, October 8th and 9th, on Saturday and Sunday, from 10 to 4 on Saturday and noon to 4 on Sunday. Did I get that right?
That's right.
Okay.
And don't forget to come to our party.
And the party on
6 to 9.
Saturday evening at Alluvial.
That's right.
Okay.
And thanks to Alluvial.
Right. Thank you both for coming in and talking to us. I'm excited about it. I'm going to go. I don't know if I'll hit all of them, but I'm going to go to some.
Great. Thanks, Gail.
Thank you.
That was a Haitian folk song called Yellow Bird, which has been recorded by a number of people, but that was a steel drum version of it. You're listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and two new guests just popped into KHOI, Jennifer Knox and Tyler Harms. Welcome.
Hi.
Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Pleasure.
Yeah. So you are the people behind Iowa Bird of Mouth.
Yes.
Which is an interesting title.
Thank
not
you.
Not Bird of the Month.
Nope.
Not whatever. So tell us, what is Iowa Bird of Mouth?
Well, it's a play on word of mouth. It is a crowdsourced poetry project online where we invite anyone, regardless of their publication history or writing style, to contribute up to 300 words a day to our crowdsourced poem. Every month, the spotlight bird will change, and today is the last day to contribute to the poem about the goldfinch. And tomorrow, we'll be moving on to the poem for the ringneck pheasant.
So just let me be – so this is one poem that gets written throughout the month that anyone can contribute to.
Yes. And when you contribute, every submission is separate from the one previous to it with a blank line. So you can see – if you go to the poem, you can see all the different submissions. You can also add your name to the contributors list. And we have a National Book Award nominee on our contributors list, and all sorts of terrific poets, along with people who have never submitted to a poem before or never written a poem. And it's great to see that mix of talent and bird lovers come together on the list.
And does it go in sequence, or can you insert your contribution at some previous
point?
It goes
in sequence, order of who's okay. submitted. So you can scroll down the poem and see where is the last verse, and you can play off the last verse that was submitted, or you can start something completely different.
Okay. And is this a good time for you to read us a little
Absolutely.
Bit of
so
people's contributions?
I've brought in three submissions from Poem to the Goldfinch. And this is, you can also put in a title for your poem, so that will pop up in the middle of the poem. We'll see a title,
okay.
and it will be like a We're starting something new, and this has a title, Year of the Goldfinches. There were two that hung and hovered by the mud puddle and musk thistle, flitting from one splintered fence post to another, bathing in the rainwater's glint like it was a mirror to some other universe where things were easier than the place I lived. I watched for them, the bright peacocking male, the low-watt female on each morning walk. Days spent digging for some sort of elusive answer to the question my curving figure made. Later, I learned they were a symbol for resurrection. Of course they were. My two yellow-winged twins, teaching me to feast on thorns and like it.
Wow.
And here's another submission.
You could really picture that.
It's so beautiful,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
There's such great writing happening in the submission field. It's thrilling. Here's another one. Finches flit. Finches dart. Finches, lightning swift, pretend seriousness when I think their point is to make me smile. And here's a funny haiku that someone submitted. Rob Lowe fells goldfinch in charity golf tourney, quits the game for good. And I guess that really happened.
Really?
Rob Lowe
hit a goldfinch
with a golf ball at a celebrity golf tournament and quit the game.
Oh, wow.
And you can Google image that, and you see him holding the dead goldfinch.
Yeah, because goldfinches are so beautiful.
So beautiful.
Yeah. And they made it into a haiku.
Somebody made it into a haiku.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So why the focus on birds?
I'm going to let Tyler feel that.
Well, you know, birds are everywhere. We see birds in our everyday lives, and they're just fascinating creatures, I think, to lots of folks. And they're kind of the gateway to nature, and a lot of people who begin to enjoy birds are those that really connect with nature in general. And so I think that birds are very good for that.
And so because birds are everywhere, as you say, and they allow people to connect with nature, then you're allowing them to make that connection between poetry and nature.
Absolutely.
As a way into poetry, perhaps.
Yes, absolutely. Right. It's a wild animal that moves through all sorts of different spaces, moves through urban spaces and rural spaces, and connects this crowd of ours, okay. which is perfect for crowdsourcing.
Yeah, yeah. And so this month you had a very small bird, the goldfinch, and mm-hmm. now you're going to a ring-necked pheasant, which is a much larger bird. How do you decide, and why did you pick that bird?
Oh, it's Jennifer and I talked long about this, about how challenging it was for me to pick all of the birds for this project. The ring-necked pheasant is probably one of the most well-known birds to Iowa for many reasons. It's the only species, in fact, on our list that is not native to our state. It was introduced to Iowa accidentally back in the early 1900s. An individual had a cage of ringneck pheasants on his farm, and the cage blew over in a windstorm, and the birds got out, and now we have ringneck pheasants
wow.
in our state.
Mm-hmm.
So very interesting story for the bird. But the pheasant is very important to Iowa for economic reasons, and that is because they're a game species.
Hunting.
They're hunted.
Yeah.
And pheasant hunters spend a significant amount of money, hundreds of thousands of dollars in our state every year. And so and Iowa is well known across the country for its pheasant hunting. So they're very important bird to our state and a quite stunning bird also, if
Gorgeous.
You've ever seen one. Just
mm-hmm.
lots of color and
yeah.
and they're very vibrant and very visible on the Iowa landscape.
Right. So I can see that bird evoking some really fantastic poetry writing as
mm-hmm.
well.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting to see what kinds of different things come out with a bird like a ringneck pheasant.
We Absolutely. Would love to have people who hunt mm-hmm. to contribute to the poem. We would love to get contributions from the Isaac Walton League and people who enjoy that aspect
okay.
of birding.
So how many months have you been doing this?
This is our second month.
Oh, okay. All mm-hmm. right. And thanks for coming and telling
thanks
us about
us.
It. We're going to have a link on our website
Yay.
So people can join
Good.
In and contribute.
We'd love to see your words.
And apparently we're going to have you on. We're going to try to have you on every month
cool.
to tell us about the next upcoming bird and maybe read some segments.
Terrific. So, November will be the crow. So that's going to be a very fun month.
Very cool.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thanks. To both of you for coming in. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
This is KHOI Community Radio, and you've been listening to Local Talk. I've been your host, Gail Seiler. Thanks to all of our guests today, Kareem Abdelhamid, Mohamed Abufalga, and Mohamed El Fortia, ISU students who spoke about the Arab Spring, Catherine Reinhart and Sarah Merritt, who spoke about the studio tour, and last but not least, Jennifer Knox and Tyler Harms, who just told us about Iowa Bird of Mouth. We'll have links for all of that on our website. Local Talk is broadcast on KHOI at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can also listen to today's Local Talk show and all of our past shows online at our website, khoifm.org. Local Talk was engineered by Evan Taylor and Vincent Valeriano. Our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. We also heard Yellow Bird. KHOI is a community radio station that is driven by volunteers and made possible by donations from individuals, businesses, and organizations. You can become a member or donate at any time on our website, khoifm.org. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show, which means you can become part of our team of volunteer producers and reporters. If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation is what makes KHOI possible. Thank you for listening and see you again on the radio.
for KHOI is made possible in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. In the heart of Ames, the Ames Main Street Farmers Market brings local food and fun. Located between the 300 and 400 blocks of Main Street, including Tom Evans Plaza, the Farmers Market provides fresh local fruits, veggies, meats, breads, handcrafted goods, live music, and family entertainment every Saturday.
Support for KHOI comes from ISU Theater presenting Mr. Burns, a post-electric play after the power grid fails. Survivors take solace in retelling their favorite Simpsons episodes. September 30th through October 9th in Ames. Tickets and showtimes at theater.iastate.edu.